Warning, this episode contains explicit content. Please proceed with caution. What's up, everybody, and welcome back to Whiskey Sex Talk. I am your host, Romeo, and here joining us today is Wendy. Welcome back, Wendy, to the show.
Hey, Romeo. Thanks so much for having me. I'm honored to be a repeat guest.
Oh, man, I'm excited for today's topic. So, Wendy, the last time you were here in the studio, we did the episode, you said something interesting about codependency. So that's what we're going to be focusing on today, ladies and gentlemen, on codependency, because Wendy has a very, very interesting take on it. And I actually want to explore this and hear what she has to say about codependency.
Well, thank you so much. Yes, when we talked last time, I think it was in something that you shared, and you used the word codependency, and I offered that I don't really so much believe in codependency per se, the way it is expressed in the way it is defined, which is that there is something wrong with the person who is in this relationship with perhaps an addict, that they are enabling that addict, that they need that addict to be that way, that they serve that person or perhaps controlled by that person, and that they like it that way, want it, or not even that they like it, but that they thrive in that dynamic. And to me, that's a very pathologizing view. And I always really try and be very strength-based in my work, firstly. And also, it's not just that I'm saying it's pathologizing, so I don't use that. I really, with all my clients, whatever the symptoms, I say that I'm making air quotes, but symptoms are, what is the presenting problem, what they come with. I really look for the reasons why, because I always find an understanding of, well, of course this is how it is for you because look at your history.
Right.
So I do a really, really in-depth view of a person's family of origin. What are the messages they got, spoken and unspoken? What was the dynamic? What was the dynamic between their parents? What was their relationship with their parents? How were emotions attended to or not attended to? How was sex talked about or not talked about? How did they come to be the person that they are? And whether somebody is labeled, comes in and says, I think I'm codependent, or they come in and they have an out of control sexual behavior, or they come in and they, or it's a couple, you know, and they're trying to understand what happens between them. It always makes sense, right? When we look at their history, whether it's the family of origin, whether it's significant events that may have happened in their adult life, and what triggers them, and then what they do to survive those triggers. So I don't see it so much as codependency as, oh, this makes sense that this behavior is there. For example, oh, it makes sense that you shut down when your your wife, Sue, comes to you very angry because you didn't do something she asks you to do. Because when you were growing up, nobody heard you. And the way you coped with that is you just went inside. You recognized there's nobody that's going to understand my needs, so I'm just going to shut down.
Thank you. And I just want to clarify for our audience. So according to the Mental Health America, codependency is a learned behavior that can be passed down from one generation to another. It's an emotional and behavior condition that affects an individual's ability to have a healthy, mutually satisfying relationship. And Wendy, I really do love how you're taking a negative, something that is seen as a negative, and turning it into a positive. Because, there's that kind of like, from how I'm understanding, you can correct me, I feel that you're taking that codependency and you're kind of switching into more of like a dependency. Like people, we're human beings, you know, we depend on people. We're social creatures. We're social beings, you know, and we live in communities and we rely on each other for survival. And there's nothing wrong with needing others and relying on others and asking for help. And a healthy dependency does exist. And that, I believe they call it like interdependency. But I love how you're taking this to understand the individual, to understand the relationship, because, you know, we've seen couples that are codependent, and you know, we from the outside are very quick to assess and kind of judge a couple. Oh, they're so codependent. I've done it multiple times. Mm-hmm. I can say that. But I love that it is how you're seeing it, because it is true. You have to take everything into account of how the individual responds to things, why, specifically answering the why. You know, because normally when we tackle codependency, you know, when psychologists or people, when you seek help, they try to see, well, how do we deprogram you from that because of your childhood trauma and because of this? And how do you build that level of respect for yourself and that sense of emotional safety that can kind of, you can navigate in relationships, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you have you hit it there, right? When you said ask the question why, you know, why? So as therapists, we really are a little bit of sort of private eyes of the intra-psychological makeup of a person to understand that. And yes, sometimes it may get that label of codependency. But in any couple that I work with, there is, in my own marriage, you know, I could show you the interaction between me and my husband. It may not look like codependency because nobody's thankfully an addict in my home, but there's other stuff, you know, there's plenty of other stuff. And so for example, a woman who caters to her alcoholic husband, right? She catered maybe to her alcoholic father. She was there, had to parent him in a way. Mm-hmm. Maybe mom was depressed and not available, and dad was an alcoholic, and she was the one that had to wake him up or take care of him or cover him on the sofa when he came home. And maybe she received some love for that. Maybe dad, that was the only connection she had with him.
Right.
Right. That was love. That was all she had with him, because his primary relationship was with alcohol and her mother's primary relationship was with depression. And that was all she had. And so it makes sense. One, that the familiarity of being with someone like that, and then caretaking someone like that, mm-hmm. because it means love. And I would build on what you said about deprogramming that. And I would say more understanding,
right?
That role of childhood, we unconsciously take those coping strategies with us into our adult life. And sometimes they're not useful in our adult life because, wow, I'm in this relationship and I'm really not happy, mm-hmm. but this is what I do. If I said, oh, you're just codependent, you know, you really need to get away from this man. He's terrible and you need to value yourself.
Right. And yeah. And I was just saying, people don't like to hear the negatives of it because it almost, the truth is when you hear this, it's like, oh, I'm broken. Oh, I have it. You know, oh my gosh, something's wrong because, you know, it's kind of like a need to be needed, right? Like codependent, like at least codependence, build their self-worth on helping, fixing, and rescuing others. And, you know, as you can imagine, that creates what we perceive as the imbalance in the relationship. In order for, like, a codependent relationship to work, both, like, I want to say, like, I guess individuals involved must accept their roles, one as a caretaker and one as the giver, and one as, like, the infirmed or the taker. And, you know, it's interesting. You said something interesting about, like, you said something about the alcoholic father and I think the daughter realizing that this was her that was real. You said something that really did real. And that's always the question, right? When you start analyzing your childhood trauma, specifically if you're trying to tackle codependency, like if you're a codependent person, you go back and you take this inventory and then you realize, well, was that true? Were those feelings true? Was that fabricated? But it did happen. And mm-hmm. and that is true. Like, you did help. Like, let's say an example, like alcoholic father, the mother or the daughter, you know, you did help. You did show level of affection. It's just it was in a not the best case scenario for sure.
Right. Yeah. And that was completely out of control, the control of right. the child. And that really the yearning underneath is for love and connection. Mm-hmm. And to help them understand, one, as a child, that was all there was for them. That was all they were going to get. Those were the crumbs of love and connection when being approved of for taking care of your alcoholic father, being with him in that way. And then as you grow up, right, recognizing, well, here I am doing this again. Mm-hmm. And understanding how it makes sense. Well, yeah. I've taken that coping strategy. I found someone just like that. And I think that this is the only way, perhaps, that I can get love and attention. And change is about doing something different, right? That when you recognize, because it's like this automatic past collapses into present. We,
oh, yeah.
You know, all unconscious. Right. I give voice to the unconscious as saying, well, this is love. This is what love means. This is your template. This is the paradigm of love that you have. And when a person recognizes that, they can say, okay, I actually have some choice here. When right. I'm aware that, hey, I'm going into another relationship like that, but it's still not quite satisfying.
And that, yeah. that and that's key. You said being aware. I think that's the difference, because I think once you're aware that, let's say you are a person that is, you happen to display these codependent traits, then you're able to distinguish, at least in my view, the difference between like shifting, like what you're doing, like doing the positive, turning that negative into a positive, shifting kind of like the knowing when you're helping versus enabling. Because we listen, it's one of those tricky things, because let's say that you are and you know you can't distinguish between helping versus enabling. I mean, let's go back to the scenario of the, let's say, I don't know, the alcoholic father. I'm just giving this as an example because you gave that.
Good example. Yeah.
You know, it's like you have to kind of see when was I enabling versus helping, because those two can overlap, you know. And, you know, let's say you're a codependent caregiver. You need to be needed so strong that, like, you kind of like, how can I say this? Like, you may unconsciously enable your loved ones to remain dysfunctional. And that mm-hmm. is the wrong type of thing. If you're using your enabling in a way where they're not, it's not helping them. Because when we love someone, mm-hmm. we are going to help someone. We're not going to put them in the state of like, you're going to be dysfunctional because this is the way I feel the love, keeping the other person. It's not, it's imbalanced is what I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It is not a useful cycle.
Right.
Right. Not a useful cycle between people, because nobody benefits from it. The alcoholic gets sicker, and the otherwise, what you know, in general common terms, codependent stays unhappy, right? In that role. And so if it was a couple that was coming to me, certainly it would be about highlighting that, how it goes between them now.
Right.
And where change needs to happen on both sides. Obviously, if the couple's going to stay together, or if it's going to be someone just changing their view and recognizing that sometimes that will break up a couple, because one person decides, I don't want to change, and the other person does want to change and works on themselves, I gets healthier in the sense, not that they were sick, but that they understand what they were doing wasn't useful and wasn't making them happy, and that they make a choice through their awareness to do something different. To say, sorry, I'm not going to go to the liquor store for you and bring you that. No, I'm not going to put the covers over you. And I can get love as a child, I would never want to say that the child enables, because the child is just taking care of their parent. The child is the only true victim.
Right.
All of us as adults, we have the agency to get up and walk out the door and say, this doesn't work for me.
Right.
Children don't.
Right. And, you know, and what's interesting, what you're saying is that, you know, when one, like, let's take the couple, right? When one decides, like, okay, I'm going to get better. Like, it is very, very scary, because if you're in a codependent relationship, or you're codependent, like, you may feel like you no longer have a purpose, and without a purpose, you don't feel worthy of love, and that is frightening, a frightening thought, because what's the main fear behind it? Abandonment can drive you to persistent, like, to nagging. You know, it could drive you to kind of falling into that, and to giving the unwanted advice, or just enabling. And, but that's the thing. You said something interesting. We're adults. We know when we to walk away. And, you know, you see this all the time, right? Where, and this is why, like, rom-com movies, like, they're amazing, but there's a lot of stuff that they insert there that they telling us, oh, this is how we have to behave. I'm just giving an example, because I've seen rom-coms. They have these, you know, rom-coms are not the best form of, you know, to follow, like, a formula. This is how I'm going to find love. But, you know, I really wanted to just to kind of just say that, like, we have to be able to have that awareness. And you said it, like, you know, the child doesn't know, but the adult does. And
the adult may not know, though. The adult,
if you haven't, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, that's part of the intention of therapy, and to help them understand how is it that I am in this space right now, and how does it make sense? I always think it makes sense. Yeah, of course, this is what you do, because this meant love, and unconsciously, this is what feels like love. And because sometimes we don't know as adults, because all of it is so subterranean, right? It's not, we don't hear the music, even though the music is playing and guiding us wherever we go.
Right.
We don't know. And that's how I look at the unconscious. And therapy helps to make that more conscious and more awareness. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. I just wanted to kind of piggyback on what you were saying. You know, I just wanted to say that enabling is different than the kind of helping, which means, like, you know, like, helping in a way where it's characterized as interdependent in relationship, which that encourages, you know, love, and encourages to become more self-sufficient and confident, because you got to turn that negative into a positive. And that's what you're saying. Like, you have to be, you know, there are people, there are a lot of people out there that don't, you know, I know people that will never, ever see a therapist, and they have a lot of issues. Mm-hmm. And there are people with a specific type of mindset and view, like, you know, you could tell that they suffer from depression and that they're codependent, and they will never, they won't admit it. They rather just live in that, and they don't realize it. We all see it, and it's hard to not help those. You know, like, the ones that don't really acknowledge it. Oh, you know, whatever, I'm this way, you know, whatever, you know, you know what I'm talking about. There's people out there, Wendy. Yeah. And so, Wendy, here's what I want to know. Like, what's the first step that one needs to take to initiate? Like, if, let's say, you are a person that you know what? I still have childhood trauma, or maybe you don't even know you have childhood trauma, but you do know that, okay, I'm a codependent person. I'm kind of like my whole life. Cause, you know, that's the one thing about this is the one, the most obvious one, right? When the persons are in a relationship, one of them gets lost in the relationship. They can live, they can go to work and do everything, but everything is centered around the relationship. You know, they don't have friends. They're just kind of dependent on that, and they live and breathe on that. What's the first step we need to take to kind of like, okay, I realize that I'm codependent. I have a codependency issue. What do I need to do next in order to turn this into a positive experience and to learn more about myself?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so again, I'll just, you know, bristle a little at the word codependency, if I may out loud do that. But I think it's more about somebody recognizing first, they might just say, I'm not happy. Mm. I am not happy. I'm living this existence and I'm really not happy. And I, and to have the courage, because as you said, there's plenty of people that you know, that I meet in my personal life and through work that think you need to be tough and you just don't feel those emotions.
Right.
That's for sissies. And,
right.
And actually, it takes way more courage.
Right.
Begin to peel back the defensive blanket of anger or toughness to see whatever softness is underneath there, the vulnerable parts. It takes a whole lot more courage to do that. And so if somebody realizes, well, I'm just not happy, they may not know why. They may just be unhappy in an existence. And
they love the person, out. You know?
They may love the person, yeah, mm-hmm. but to reach out to a therapist, to always be safe, because there's always an issue. You know, I never want to tell somebody to approach their partner if it's not safe for them, if the partner is volatile in a violent
right,
way.
Which,
certainly you need to preserve safety at all costs. But to take that step and to have the courage to say, something I'm doing is not working for me and I want to learn more.
I love that you said that, because I feel that, and I'm saying this, like, when codependency goes unchecked or untreated or you don't work on yourself, you will feel, you know, like you're trapped, or, you know, it traps people really in an unhealthy and sometimes abusive relationship, which is what you said. And when mm-hmm. you transform that into like, okay, you know what? I want to grow. I'm not happy. I mean, how that that alone, that's the first step, because what does it show? That you are willing to grow emotionally, you know, spiritually, everything else comes into falls into place. But really, that is the key, because, you know, so many people, you know, they just go through the emotions, you know, the emotions, and that kind of numbs you. You know, you can totally be in like a codependency relationship and you're just going through the emotions, you know, like, and that's it, and like you don't do anything because mm-hmm. you feel, well, this is normal, this, because I, you know, I didn't, it's connection to your childhood trauma, and this is mm-hmm. home, this feels familiar, and because it's this way, then I guess this is okay. But mm-hmm. but the first step is, hey, you know what, I got to love myself. I got to turn this into a positive and mm-hmm. and really not approach it in a way how, oh, I got to, you know, like I said earlier, oh, let's deprogram. Let's tackle. Oh, you got to stop mm-hmm. that. You got to go in this direction. I love that taking that first step gives you that ability to kind of like grow and be like, you know what, these are my strengths. It's kind of like, you know, when you go to an office interview, they ask mm-hmm. you, what are your strengths? And that's a two-part answer, which is say something negative about it, but then turn it into a positive. It's mm-hmm. it's much easier. And I really do like that you take that approach, because, you know, we're seeing that some of these old, I don't want to say these schools of thought, sometimes it doesn't work for a lot of people. You know, like, and people got to find different ways that will enable them to be more healthy partners and individuals.
And remembering too that every relationship is a dance that's co-created.
Yes.
Right? And whether it looks like, again, I'm air quoting codependency, or whether it's just a couple comes and says, we don't communicate well. And this is what happens. I yell and scream. He shuts down. The more he shuts down, the more I yell and scream, and we're not happy. And again, it's the same dive, whether it's that, or it's something that looks like codependency. Mm. It's the same dive of understanding how it makes sense and understanding that, well, you can change. Oh, so you, Joe, use alcohol, and you've used alcohol your whole life to soothe the pain of your childhood. You found that when you you're with alcohol, you just don't have to think about anything. But when you are not with alcohol, you have to begin to face that, right? Or you could say, as you said before, oh, this is just the way I am. I like to drink. I'm not going to stop drinking, right? Yeah, it's just what I do,
right?
What would you be with if you weren't with alcohol? And then on the other side, this person, what would you be with if you had a partner that was available to you that said, hey, let's go out for dinner tonight. I'll drive. You don't have to take care of that. Every relationship is co-created.
It is, you know, and sometimes it's hard functioning independently because, you know, let's say if you are, you know, you're constantly relied on that someone else, you know, it can be very, very hard because you love them, not because, you know, you want to enable them, but really it's because you love them and it's very, very hard functioning. You know, listen, relationships are very important, you know, for sure, yeah. Clearly, you know, they add an extra layer of joy and fulfillment. Let's be honest to that, to our lives, you know.
Of course.
We grow so much from being with people. And I think that's always the goal, right? When you're in a relationship, you want someone that's going to enhance and complement your life. Because if you feel stuck and you're going through the emotion and it's not working for you, then that says something about you and not the relationship. It's an indication, hey, you know what? Like, this is not working. Like, if you're constantly just going, you know, being pulled back in, then you gotta do something. And I like that your approach is very, very, I want to say proactive, if that's the correct word here, but I really do enjoy that you're taking that what's been seen as a negative thing, because, you know, you can Google codependency or being codependent and everything is negative, you know. And
everything is negative.
It's so bad because here's what I'm thinking. It's bad as it is, you Google it. Okay, I have a codependency issue. I'm going to Google it. And what happens? You see all this negative stuff. What is it going to do to you? It's going to make you feel worse and broken. And I'm not, I can't repair myself. Or, you know, what ends up happening? You end up like, there's more things to it. But, you know, really the whole thing is we all need to be working on each other, especially if we're in a relationship. You know, nothing's black and white, you know. You said at the beginning, you know, when you work with people, you take everything into consideration, like your upbringing, because that's really determines how the dynamics, your relationship dynamics with individuals.
Yeah, very much. Our early life very much informs our adult life. But the things we do to cope in our early life are just not always useful in our adult life. And we can learn new ways. It makes sense that we do them. And when we understand it and we recognize, oh, I'm about to do that, that's where we have a choice. We really can't help how we feel, but we can always help what we do.
All right, Wendy. One last piece of advice do you have for our audience? Just any last words?
You know, a thought came to mind in a form of therapy developed by Michael White and David Epstein out of Australia and New Zealand. Called narrative therapy. They use the metaphor of panning for gold. And it came to me when you talked about this strength, when we were talking about strength-based and how if you hear all this negative and it's terrible. And the idea of panning for gold, if somebody comes and says, I'm anxious all the time. My anxiety ties me down. Say, well, can you think of one time panning for gold, that one time, that one shiny nugget, where you got control over anxiety, and find the strength, right? Find the strength and then grow that. It's like your garden. It's one part thriving, but the rest is not. What am I doing different? What did I do different that one time I didn't let anxiety get me? Let me think about that. And how can I bring more of that? So find your strengths.
Yeah, I love this. You know, I just want to comment to that just because we're at the end here, but it's interesting you said anxiety. You know, I'm an actor, and one of the things that actors experience is anxiety. Every actor, everybody in the industry that is talent experience this. That is such a bad negative word. And I love that you said the narrative theory. I believe you said the narrative.
collaborative approach.
Our teacher told us this. He goes, you guys got to stop using anxiety and say you are excited, because that has more of a positive and it actually really works differently. Because like what you said, if you're negative, if you, I love what you said. That just to kind of reaffirm what you said. But Wendy, if people want to get a hold of you, what's the best way?
Oh, I have a website, WendyDumbroffTherapy.com. Wendy with an I, because that's what my parents did. Yeah.
All right, Wendy, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you, Romeo. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that is it for today. I am your host, Romeo. Till next time. Bye.